Welcome to the most important podcast of your financial future. Today, we're going to teach you how to lose money. Pay attention, because these are the most valuable lessons you'll ever learn about creating wealth. Let's get started.
Salmon P. Chase ran unsuccessfully for the presidential nomination in every election from 1856 to 1872. Salmon P. Chase was elected to the United States Senate, helped found the Republican Party, was elected governor of Ohio, served as Secretary of the Treasury under President Abraham Lincoln, established the national bank system, and served as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. His portrait is on the $10,000 bill. Hi, welcome everyone. I'm Paul Moore.
There's a $10,000 bill? Wait a minute.
I figured you would know that.
I might have heard a legend of that once, but I've never actually seen it or proven its existence. That is a bit of trivia that I'm going to store away for the rest of time, Paul. Thank you for that.
You bet.
My name is Josh Thomas, and this is How to Lose Money. We're here for a podcast where we discuss defining moments of success through distinctive stories of failure with business owners, investors, and entrepreneurs.
Today, our guest is Ian Walsh, who's going to tell us how to lose money by generating too many leads. Hey, Ian.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's going great, Ian. And I would say that for all of the entrepreneurs on our show who are listening, having too many leads, it doesn't tend to be a problem that that we have. So I'm interested to see, you know, what how this story unfolds. But could you just tell me quickly, how could you possibly have too many leads?
So it's about having too many leads at the wrong time. And not being infrastructurally prepared to handle the inflow. The very short answer to that would be, if I am a mom and pop shop, am I prepared to handle the influx of a Super Bowl commercial's response? The answer is probably no. And that would be like the ultimate analogy to it. So
that's a pretty good analogy. So I look forward to digging into this here. So Ian, every failure story we encounter follows a predictable pattern. And because of that, we've developed a marker system with flags to help keep everyone on track as to where we are. Here's a quick overview. The green flag is our initial part of the story. The red flag is the first sign of trouble. The black flag is the point of no return where everything is dead. And the white flag signifies total surrender and the moment that we walk away. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about our guest today?
You bet. Ian Walsh has been a full-time real estate investor since 2009. He entered the industry by building We Sell Homes to Fix, which was primarily a real estate wholesaling company. From there, Ian built a property management company, which was sold in 2015 to TCS Management. During his time in the Philadelphia investment market, he partnered with Hard Money Bankers and has since underwritten all of the loans in the Eastern Pennsylvania and South Jersey markets, which is his primary function at this time. Hard Money Bankers is the leading hard money lending company in the Eastern Pennsylvania, South Jersey, Maryland, D.C., and Northern Virginia markets. So, Ian, when I heard the word syndicator about 15 years ago, I thought that sounded something like the mafia. And when I heard about hard money, it sounded kind of similar to me. Now, of course, I am a syndicator for multifamily, and you're a hard money lender. For those out there in our audience who might not know about hard money, sounds kind of dark and shadowy, but can you dispel that for us? What's hard money lending?
Yeah, sure. And I certainly get that. I don't know how many calls a week and people go, oh, are you connected to the mob? I said, no, it's come on. So typically what it is, you know, we took a great domain name, which was Hard Money Bankers, and that was why we called it that. But hard money, private money, soft money, it's all the same. It's all the same thing. It's just privately raised money that's being lent out, typically in your local market space, as opposed to going into a bank. We just had a good domain name. It is not something to be scared of. It's, people can call it private money. I think that's usually what people try to use it, the soft term of it, as opposed to hard money. But you're in the same exact world. Just kind of the reputation, I guess, this industry got.
So, Ian, take us into the story here. You know, first of all, I love the name Hard Money Bankers. I love the fact that you got that domain name. Hopefully you got it, you know, back before it would have been really expensive. But tell us, we're at the green flag here for your story. What's going on with your budding business, and set us up for all of the good things that are happening before things got bad.
Yeah, I guess, you know, things are good now because I started in a wholesaling business, which was, you know, you're signing the rights of a contract in private real estate. I came out of school in 2009 and had no money, learned what this was from Rich Dad, Poor Dad's Robert Kiyosaki book, just got after it. And I learned very soon there following that you really have to be good at marketing to make it anywhere in a local business space, and honestly, in a big business space. So that was what I primarily focused on, but at the same time, I had to learn how to run, build, create a business, and that was my first experience with it. So now I've translated the lessons I've learned over the years into our hard money lending and our management company, in how to handle the proper infrastructure, when to expect too much lead flow. So now and moving forward, things have been good just through the experiences and, you know, failures that you bump into that you definitely should learn from and then progress. So would you like me to jump into the actual story about the lead gen? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. So tell us about that. I appreciate the background here. You know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a transformative book, and it's one that I wish I had had when I was a child. And I wish that my mom had when she was a child. In fact, I just recently bought that and gave it to my mother, who doesn't have an entrepreneurial bone in her body. But as she's reading through it, she realized, man, there is so much out there to learn about money that my parents or the people around me never knew and never taught me. And I wish that I wasn't getting this book, you know, later in life. And so I'm pleased to hear you talk about that particular book. But tell us how you started this business, you figured out some marketing, and you've got some leads coming in. And that all sounds like a good thing. And we shared the analogy here at the beginning of the story. You know, before the red flag came up, how many leads were you generating, and what was your goal with those leads?
Yeah, so the goal was, you know, once we learned how to wholesale a deal, and you're right about the Robert Kiyosaki book, which was, it's mentally transforming. And that was where I got to, which, okay, I mentally transformed myself to understand how to wholesale. Now I need to get the lead gens going, or lead generating going. So more was better, right? That was all I could think of. More was better. And because it is, it really is, if you're set up with the proper infrastructure to handle the lead flow. So at that time, all of our money that was coming in, we weren't putting it so much in our pockets as we were reinvesting it in the business. And we allowed the budget for marketing on a monthly basis to grow and grow. And we were, sure enough, doing more deals than anybody I knew in the city at that time in our space. We're also spending $25,000, $30,000 a month. And for two individuals at the time running that, a couple guys on staff, that's some big overhead. So we're allocating that kind of money towards it. And I remember at one point we were trying different marketing techniques. And I said, actually, if you go back before my real estate days, I used to door knock for a college painting company. So I understood what door knocking was and how to get leads from it. So I said, let's try it in this method. So we allocated some money towards, or a good chunk of money towards, door knocking to find leads to bring in for wholesale deals or off-market transactions in the wholesale space. We had teams together, we're running. We didn't anticipate the amount of leads that would come back. It was an incredible method to marketing, which, it's not anything new, right? People have been door knocking before the internet. It just had an amazing response in terms of the leads that would come in. So we would have Canvas teams out every night. We were excited and pumped up. We'd have Canvas teams that would go out, door knock. We'd map out the neighborhoods and so forth. They would come back with their leads handwritten, hand them to us in a box, myself and my partner. And then it was our job to filter those leads. Well, the problem was, when these guys were coming back with a box of 40, 50 a night, when in our industry, if you get, if you get 100 leads in a week, that's a lot. And these guys are bringing home four or five times that amount. Before we knew it, we're trying to find deals. We're trying to follow up with people. We don't have people to do the questionnaires and the infrastructure. But in the meantime, we don't want to stop the train. So we're faced with a pretty serious decision, which is you're literally dumping $25,000, $30,000 outbound towards marketing, bringing it all back and just putting that pile of money in front of you in the room, and you can't touch it because you don't know how to utilize it. You don't know what to do with it. That leads to a pretty tricky stance when your budget isn't that big. So
you've converted your money into a non-transferable currency of sorts.
That's exactly right. But it is transferable if I have the translator. I didn't have the translator being the infrastructure. That was the biggest problem.
So it sounds like that was really the first red flag. You've got this Canvas team who is kicking butt, and they're going out there and they're producing five times the amount of leads that you would ever expect. And now you've got this big box of leads and you don't have the system to sort through them. Now, did you have any indication at this time whether these leads were qualified or were they low quality? Did you know any of that at this point?
No, we didn't. We weren't able to verify because it was just so overwhelming, the amount that came in. I do know we did pull some deals out of it, but not to the efficiency level. So there were real deals sitting in there, but we never got to the point where we validated the quality of those leads because it was so overwhelming.
So take us forward to, kind of the next section that we follow in this journey. You know, the red flag comes up. Wow, I've got all these leads. I don't know what to do with them. There's a black flag moment where you realize that this is not sustainable. You're burning cash. You're turning it into more of a liability at this point because somebody has gone and done the work. You have to pay them for the work, and you're looking at this lead, and you don't have any way to process it. Take us through the conversation with your business partner where you realized that, man, we have to do something different.
Yeah, it was pretty clear black flag. I'd say there's nothing left for interpretation, as in the bank account goes one way and goes there quickly. And you start to say, can we start doing this over a 90-day period? Can I do this over a 120-day period? The answer is no. So the question was, that was actually at the exact same time that we were making that decision, we had a lot of clients coming back to us that were asking about property management. And I don't know if it was out of necessity, out of luck, out of whatever it was at the moment, we were just burned out from all of that interaction with wholesaling, that we said, hey, we're either going to be putting out $25,000, $30,000 a month trying to build the infrastructure to handle this, or let's start spending time building this property management company. I think it was a combination of the money being burned out from wholesaling. It's very high speed transactional. Not that property management is any sexier to get into. But it was maybe just a change of pace. So the black flag moment certainly was revolving around the fact that it was the bank accounts, how much we could afford to continue to do that and not be prepared to handle it infrastructure wise.
Yeah, the bank account going down is always a signal that something needs to change. You know, you say that kind of in jest a little bit, but it's a very serious thing that most people honestly just ignore.
No question. I mean, that's huge. I mean, you ignore it till you can't. I've learned that early. I can laugh now. It was definitely not funny at the moment. There's nothing funny about it. You stress, you're aging quickly, but for sure.
Right. You know, I think the problem, Josh, and you hang around entrepreneurs all the time, but I think part of the problem is entrepreneurs by nature, there's like 6% of people in the population that do have entrepreneurial bones in their body. And I think by nature, we're inherently optimistic. And so we can look at a declining bank balance and say, it's going to turn around next week.
I can relate to that, Paul, and thanks for bringing that comment into the conversation. You know, I don't have enough fingers to count all of the opportunities that I pursued well past their expiration date due to overwhelming optimism. And, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, and as I'm sure Ian can relate, but you know, if I had just cut it loose when it was obvious that I needed to cut it loose, I don't know that I would have a whole lot more money now, but I would sure have a whole lot more time freedom And I could have done anything at all with that time, and it would have been more productive, including just sitting around and playing with the dog, or, you know, hanging out with my kiddo or something. Any of that stuff would have been better suited for me than trying to put lipstick on a pig, if you will. So Ian, take us through here as you reach the white flag and it's time to walk away from this opportunity and pivot. You had been discussing property management versus wholesale. At what point did you make a decision, and which way did you go to kind of correct this issue?
Yeah, I think so it was a combination of timing, like I had mentioned, and we were a little burned out. And the transitional pivot point was, you know, we didn't want to outright give up this skill set that we built up. In fact, it led a lot to what I'm able to do today in my lending and so forth, was understanding my marketplace. So it wasn't all was lost type moment. The way we transitioned, myself and my partner, we decided, hey, this property management thing sounds pretty good. It's steady income. You have contracts. It was appealing at the moment. I decided I was going to build the property management end, and he was going to continue to wholesale for us. So it was actually a combination of the two businesses for cash flow purposes, for the fact that we didn't have any quit in us. And, you know, it was simultaneous that we built one and built the other. And then all of a sudden the property management took over time, financially, all of that from the wholesaling. But there was a burnout factor, I think, in the wholesaling end of it, that we just we had been spent mentally, and the property management took over, and we built that infrastructure from a lot of the lessons we learned, which was very important.
If you've spent your life looking for the perfect investment, then look no further. Real estate investor, serial entrepreneur, and co-host of How to Lose Money, Paul Moore, has written his second book on real estate investing. It's called The Perfect Investment: Create Enduring Wealth from the Historic Shift to Multifamily Housing. It's available on Amazon or at his website, wellingscapital.com.
Well, and speaking of lessons learned, that's Paul is going to take you through that segment here next. But I just have to ask this question as a marketing guy. You were able to go out there and get a canvas team to churn out 40 to 50 leads a night. You know, to the extent that you're able, what the heck were you saying to these guys?
To the people at the door?
Yeah.
It was, you would think there'd be some magic sauce, but unfortunately there wasn't. It was, we knew our clientele, we knew where we were, what we were trying to attract, what kind of leads and so forth. And it was just simply going up to the door, knocking on it. And it actually wasn't the person at the door that was typically selling the house, right? Because most of the people that we were in front of were renting. So that wasn't the person we were selling to. It was, do you know anybody? And it was just a simple conversation. It was literally, hey, we're buying houses, we're investors in the area. Do you know anyone that is selling a house? And, you know, we can potentially pay a referral fee. And that was just how the conversation started. And then that was it. I mean, there was no magic closing moment, whatever it was. It was instantly people were getting on the phones with their aunt, their uncle, somebody owned a house in the neighborhood. And it was just constantly that story all night. But it was never the person in the house that we actually bought from. It was always them knowing someone.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with me. And sometimes it's the simple conversation and relationship that really makes the difference. And so I'm just sitting here and knowing, I have a really good friend of mine who sells cable internet stuff, and he runs a canvas team that goes door to door knocking. And, you know, he doesn't get anywhere near 40 to 50 leads a day. And he's been doing this for a decade. Now, he's obviously not talking about giving away free money. But I know that's quite a grind. So I'm impressed that you figured out a way to make it so easy, you know, even though it did ultimately burn you out. And I asked that question because I'm sure there are at least a dozen or so people that were listening to this podcast right now that were thinking, what was that guy's angle, you know, to get that many leads? Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought it was industry. Yeah. Honestly, I think it was industry driven more so than anything else, because the way I learned to do this was in the same type of door-to-door service-based industry, which was selling college painting jobs when I was in school. And I anticipated one out of 20 doors, somebody says, you know, yes. I think It was the industry of buying houses, the industry of giving away free money, or the ability to give away free money. I'm not sure what the honest answer was, but I can tell you that it was, I anticipated one out of 20 doors was going to be what our response was, and it was significantly higher at any given night. So I don't know. I wish I had the answer for you. I'd gladly give it to you.
Hey, Josh, maybe you and I should go to large-scale commercial apartment buildings and ask, do you know anyone who wants to sell their apartment building?
Wait, you like knock on the tenants' doors or what?
Yeah, knock on all the tenants' doors. If it's like one out of 20, my goodness, we'll be doing well, won't we?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're buying me the Gatorade, I'll go out there and do it with you. Why not?
So, Ian, we're going to transition to a segment called Failing Forward. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and you can answer each one in a sentence or two. You ready?
Go for it.
So, Ian, you had an amazing marketing machine going, all these people going door to door. You had a good thing going, and it blew up. Well, bottom line, in a sentence or two, why would you say this failure experience happened to you?
I was not prepared for the infrastructure it took to handle the inflow of business.
Well, that is, you know, I've heard from and read over the years that they say that businesses typically fail for lack of cash flow, lack of good accounting, or lack of marketing. Yours was certainly not lack of marketing. Would you put it into one of the other two categories by chance, or do you think that's a different reason?
Ultimately, it led to probably somewhere around lack of cash flow once it got ahead of us. That wasn't the initial reason. That was the catalyst.
So, Ian, what is the single most important lesson you learned from this experience?
I would say don't trick yourself, don't lie to yourself, and be prepared always in business. Those are the biggest things that I take now and every day I do.
Don't trick yourself and don't lie to yourself. That's good. How do you protect yourself from failing in this way again?
Specifically, create the infrastructure and be honest with where this could go. Where this could end up. Don't be emotionally attached to the potential outcome of the scenario. Look at it from a realistic perspective without keeping the emotions inside as best you can.
Yeah. So do you feel like plugging into a larger company, which you did after this experience, do you feel like that was help? Was that a big bonus for you? Was that the infrastructure you really needed to be able to go out and sell now?
It definitely helped. The new partners, new resources, the right partners, the right resources. But it was, I don't know what I don't know until I was there. And then I said, wow, this right. My eyes were open.
So Ian, who do you turn to when you need help?
When I need help, I turn to my partners always. I have partners with good minds for a reason, and we trust each other's perspectives.
And they're based, what, in Philly or Jersey or what?
Two of my partners in the management company are in Philadelphia, and my two partners in hard money are in Maryland. So equally very strong minds across the board.
So what advice would you give to someone else who finds themselves in a similar position to when you realized your leads were running far ahead of your ability to verify and manage them?
I would say any problem, including this one that I've run into, I knew in advance. I could see it, but I let my emotions get ahead of me. So if you can remove your emotions from the decision and know, because you know after it happens what you should or shouldn't have done, and you knew it before it actually happened. Identify that feeling or that awareness that you have that recognizes that's the moment of honesty you can have with yourself to say, is this going to prevail or am I tricking myself and just going to deal with the problem when it arises? So if you can deal with that ahead and listen to your inner voice outside of your emotions, that would be enormous in avoiding some pitfalls.
You know, I watched a video on YouTube today by a lady named Dr. Carolyn or Caroline Leaf, L-E-A-F. I highly recommend it. She's done an incredible amount of work with brain science. And she was saying that our brains process 400 billion signals and decisions per second. And it's pretty incredible. And she was saying how the intuition that we have, you know, that some of us left brain type people poo-poo is very real. And your brain is able to take in and process all kinds of things that we can't get into our brain, that we can't really know, but we just have that knowing. And it sounds like you're saying that we need to listen to that gut check or that intuition that we have as business people that's so easy to ignore, but so important.
I would agree. I would firmly agree.
You know, I really latched on to something you said earlier about not lying to yourself. And I'm a big believer in truth-telling. And truth-telling starts with telling yourself the truth. There are typically three situations going on. It could be all three, or it could be a combination. Most times, people are lying. And they're either lying to someone, or they're lying to the person that's trying to help them, like a therapist or a consultant or, you know, their boss or their subordinate or whatever, or they're lying to themselves. So they're either lying to someone, they're lying to the help, or they're lying to themselves. And it really starts with, above all else, can you tell yourself the truth? And so I'd like you to, if you could just take 1 minute and speak to why you mentioned about lying to yourself, because that goes far beyond property management and wholesale real estate deals. This digs to the core of humanity itself and why we get up in the morning and become productive people. Can you just talk about what are your thoughts about lying to yourself, and why is it so important to you to avoid that?
Because I think when you are in a situation where you're lying to yourself, and everybody does it to some capacity, there's no, you know, a portion of being optimistic in general is lying to yourself. So, but the reality is, the further you can be away from that, the more you're living in the reality, and you will achieve, I believe, the outcomes that you intend to set out to do. Because if you're not lying to yourself and you have a goal in mind, or you're trying to get somewhere, you'll avoid those moments when you do lie to yourself, or something that isn't going to happen. Your emotions get the better of you, and you're blindly optimistic in something, and you go ahead and pursue that path that then leads to failure. So I think you'll fail a whole lot less, which is nothing wrong with failure. You'll just save some time. And I think ultimately, when you lie to yourself, and the people that allow it to get away from them, and they have no awareness or control of it, are living in a fantasy world that they create in a bubble around themselves, whether it's in your personal world or your business world. I feel like if you really stop and pay attention to people, when you listen to their opinions on certain things, it's not an opinion they're giving. It's an opinion of what they think. And that's them telling themselves what they think. So therefore, if you listen closely, a lot of times they are lying to themselves and living in a fantasy world. And a lot of times they're giving you an opinion on something they're complaining about, which means something didn't go the way they anticipated or wanted in life. Therefore, where does that come back to? And that's what I believe in being honest with yourself. I think you really will end up in a better place if you're honest with yourself.
Well said. So we're going to wrap up. For now, I really appreciate you coming on, Ian, and sharing this story with us, especially your thoughts on, you know, truth-telling to yourself. Do you have any final thoughts for our audience before we go?
A couple things in business all boil down to, especially a beginning entrepreneur, and I'm not here to preach. I would just say, looking back, that, and I guess it ends with the same thing, when you don't know what you don't know, and then you go ahead and you rely on experiences that you don't have, that's the only way to really get to the next level. So as you fail at something, or as you do lie to yourself, don't beat yourself up over it, because it's only natural, I think, at a stage of when you're beginning a business, but absolutely become aware of it and learn from it. Because if you don't, you'll continue to do it. And if you continue to do it, you'll continue to get the same bad result. But so don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. The challenge of starting a business, and then ultimately learn from those failures, those moments you pick yourself up, and really, really internally look at it, because it's never the people around you. It's always you that can change the outcome. And I've learned that truly.
And that's something that you've applied to your current business, the Hard Money Bankers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So at the core of Hard Money Bankers is underwriting, which is the integrity of a deal. I have to look at a deal and decide, you know, is this capital correctly being applied to? I have to put all of my emotions aside. You know, is there, I can't have any financial desire to do a deal from one perspective. And on the other side, I have people telling me what they think their deal is worth. And I have to know without fail, truthfully, what I believe a deal is worth. And I have to know it inside my gut. So I test myself every single day in a good way. And I'd like to think I've gotten, our track record says we're pretty good at it. But every single deal I look at, I have to remove that somebody else lying to themselves, make sure I'm not, and it's not at this point in my life, or at least in this business, an issue at all. But every single deal we do, you have to test the integrity of the deal by being honest with the data in front of you.
Very good. So to learn more about Ian Walsh, you can visit hardmoneybankers.com. And Ian, is there a way that our listeners can reach out to you directly?
Sure. If they want to email me, it's just my first name, IAN, at hardmoneybankers.com.
Very good. So to our listeners, thank you very much for joining us. If this story has had an impact on you, the absolute best way you can show your appreciation to us is to write a detailed review on iTunes so that we can continue to gain more exposure and get the message out. You can also visit our website, howtolosemoney.com. On behalf of our co-host Paul and our guest Ian, thank you very much for being here. Until next time, remember this. Failure is a fact of life. Whether or not it defines you is a personal choice.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Ian. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you here next time at How to Lose Money.
You've been listening to How to Lose Money. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Have something you want to share? Send us your comments, stories, and suggestions to howtolosemoney.com, and we'll consider them for a future episode. Until next time.